The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 27th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It is free-for-all Friday around here. We're excited to bring you so much fun content on the show today. We've got a lot of things on the docket. We're going to talk football recruiting. We're going to talk football kind of season outlook or overlook, rather. Some NBA draft results now that that has come and gone. Plus, we'll revisit the conversation we had a little bit yesterday on the over and under hyped quarterbacks around the SEC. That was a lot of fun, so we'll touch on that. And then a little bit of SEC basketball conversation too, kind of what the new names and new places are around the league and how the SEC's got a chance to be really, really good once again. And so I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Appreciate you being with me on this Friday afternoon. And as I told you yesterday, no Christian Griffin. He'll be back on Monday, but we called in the better replacement. No, I'm kidding. We called in a backup, a guy who comes in frequently with us and always talks a little bit of ball, and always enjoy having him on. Lance Dahl joining us in the studio. My man, great to see you. Happy Friday.
Good to see you, man. Anytime I have the opportunity to step on the line, it is an incredible
step
Friday.
Step on the line, yes. That's a new way.
I won't cross it. I won't cross it. I'll step on it.
Yo, and it is free for all Friday, which means we will step on it and we will teeter it, but we may fall over it as well. And so appreciate you being here, of course, host of Locked On Kentucky. You cover Auburn as well. I mean, you do so many wonderful things, and we're excited to have you on for the show today. And with Free For All Friday, as always, phone lines are open. They're wide open today on this Friday afternoon. Give us a call. Tell us what's on your mind, whether it's something we're talking about, something you want to talk about, a comment, question, concern, anything on your mind. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the number to get you through to us. 334-321-1390. Or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And the hot topic of conversation around town recently, Lance, has been this idea of Auburn football recruiting and the fact that it's in the 70s in rankings. I mean, it is way down there, some of the worst in the SEC. You've got teams like Vanderbilt and Northwestern who are out-recruiting you right now, and a lot of the concern was, well, is it going to get better? And it did get better yesterday when Auburn picked up a quarterback commit in the class of 2026, a flip from Penn State to Auburn, a kid that's from Pennsylvania, decides to come and be an Auburn Tiger. And it's things like this that could start to turn the tides, if you will. But I think just at the basic core, what we can talk about today is this idea that if you win games this year, recruiting success will follow that. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think that if you look at Auburn's first couple of classes under Hugh Freeze, obviously the top 10 class from last year, you're able to sell a vision. But like you just mentioned, for only so long. I mean, if you're not producing on the field, you're not going to be able to bring in the kids to make it better. Down the road, if you show a consistent history of just not being able to string it together while adding some talent, you have to find wins somewhere. So this fall, I mean, this is the make or break season for Hugh Freeze, and there are so many different things that happen off the field in college athletics and college football in general that we haven't really started to dive into or I think really pay attention to until this NIL era, and now it's like all we focus on, and I think it's great for both people that are casually watching it and then people that cover the sport to realize, like, hey, there is so much investment that goes on behind the scenes, it's not always about what happens on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. It's very important that you get the backing from the donors, from the people that give you the money. Obviously, Auburn fans know that very well.
But it is,
despite all of the NIL, the transfer portal, all these different things that are happening off the field, I think Auburn fans realize almost better than anybody in college football this season, it's about what happens on the field that's going to make or break your long-term future with your current head coach.
And it's just, it's exhausting at this point because we've been here several times in the past decade, right? I mean, we were getting to this spot at the end of the Malzahn era after he got a stupid long extension that wasn't really deserved, but he got it. And then we came to this point of, all right, well, maybe it is time to move on, and you did. Then you got to this point with Harsin, and it obviously spiraled out of control. And now here we are again, Lance, with a new coach in his third year. And the thing that I continue to go back to is this idea of, man, if you have any sort of success, or I guess any more success last year than you did, we wouldn't be having this conversation to this extreme about the expectations or the recruiting or the money side of things or what the pressure's going to be or how much golf you play. I mean, all of that would not be to this extreme if you had just won a couple of more games last year, which we all know was right there. Auburn was so close last year on so many occasions, and you can't afford to swing and miss on those again this year.
Yeah, looking back at last year, it does every single time. I think about especially the early part of the schedule, just how much some of those losses stung, and they still do, knowing that Auburn was like maybe 20 plays away from being an 8-5 team, possibly, if they lose their bowl game. I mean, the one score loss to Cal where you throw all of those interceptions, the 10-point loss to Arkansas where you throw all of those interceptions, the 27-21 loss to Oklahoma where you throw the one interception after playing a pretty decent game.
Miserable.
The road game at Missouri where you were in that game the entire time, and then Brady Cook gets injured, he comes back, and they win that game late. The 10-point loss to Vanderbilt where your offense couldn't do anything. I mean, you should have won more games than you did. And I'm not just saying, oh, you should have won. You should have made a bowl. I'm saying, like, you should have won 8, maybe even 9 with the talent that you have on the roster. Auburn shot themselves in the foot last season. It's costing them in recruiting right now. I think you would agree. If they had gone 8-5 or 8-4 or whatever it might have been, recruiting rankings, they wouldn't be 78th right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know exactly where it would be, and I think something that's important to highlight, too, is the idea that Auburn's 2026 class is expected to be a little bit smaller in terms of the amount of guys that they want to have, the amount of commits that they want, but you still want the highly rated guys. And look, perfect example is E.J. Crowell, who committed last night. The number one ranked running back in the country had Alabama, Georgia, Texas, and Auburn, and he picked Alabama last night. He's the first really big commit. They've had several with Kalen DeBoer. This is his biggest victory yet there in Tuscaloosa, is E.J. Crowell from Jackson, Alabama, the number one ranked running back in the country. Dude is a stud. He is massive. But it's because they won in year one. They actually won some games. They actually had a chance to do something serious and something special. And Auburn has gone in the wrong direction. And so it's impossible for us to sit here and say, well, if they win 8-4, Auburn's recruiting class would be ranked 22nd right now. It's impossible to say that. But it's inevitable that it would have been better if you just win games last year.
I think that's the point, is it's not necessarily about where you fall in the recruiting rankings in the middle of June. It's just that knowing you're in a better situation heading into fall camp, and you don't have to rely on, okay, or stress yourself out over, okay, we've got to win 8 or 9 games this season. We've got to beat Georgia. We've got to find a way to beat Bama to start getting some of these recruiting wins. I will say, though, Crowell, Auburn flipped by December. I'm just going to call that. I know absolutely nothing. I want to see Auburn flip some more recruits from Bama. I hope that's in the cards. But yeah, this schedule, though, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit, Jacob. I mean, last year obviously was a pain. You have the same opportunity this season where it's difficult out the gate as opposed to last year, but still you've got a stretch where we were talking about it before we went on air. Auburn should be an 8-5 team.
That's the key word we have talked so much about. That's Christian's favorite word when we talk about this upcoming season, is it should happen. Auburn should get off to a decent start and then have a chance to beat Georgia and then rip off some wins and then have a chance to beat Bama and have a say in the college football playoff. All of that should happen in 2025. You're absolutely right. And you start looking at it, and it's just so frustrating because the tone of what we're saying and the language that we're using, I can't help but think of how different it would be, because listen to what we're saying here. We're going into 2025 and we're saying, okay, if you're Hugh Freeze, and this is what you were just alluding to a little bit, Lance, is this idea of, man, my job could be on the line this year. My job could be up for grabs. I may be on the hot seat halfway through the year if we don't get off to a good start in Waco on a Friday night. If we don't split a game or those two games between Texas A&M and Oklahoma. If we don't compete and give ourselves a chance to beat Georgia at home under the lights for the first time since 2012. My seat is hot if we can't beat the Vanderbilts and the Missouris and the Kentuckys of the world. And then if we let Alabama beat us again. All of that is a negative, scared connotation. It's very real, but it's a negative working from behind and trying to play catch up in comparison to what year three should be at most places, and what this could have been if last year went any better than it did. Was, man, look at the chance we have, look at the opportunities we have, look at what this season can be if we do get off to a hot start and we do have the chance to beat Georgia at home under the lights. If we do get hot, if you can survive the first few games, get hot down the stretch, beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl at home, you're talking about legitimate dark horse college football playoff conversations. One is a positive upward trajectory, which is what it should have been. Instead, it's a negative downwards trajectory and hoping to right the ship.
I think if you do want to spin this a positive way, during Brian Harsin's final season at Auburn, like after the first season where you lose six straight games and everything kind of craps out in the back half of the year, and heading into the off season, things didn't feel great. February hits, and Auburn tries to all of that stuff that happened with him out of the country. I'm not gonna get into everything, but it felt like the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
Before the temperature could even change, mm-hmm. Before summer even got there, it felt like it was over. With this season, I mean, listen, the tone of what we're saying, realize that we're asking Auburn to find a way to get to eight games. Let's just, I will play schedule game for a second. You get two against Ball State and South Alabama. Go on the road and beat an Oklahoma team that finished 6-6 last year.
Mm-hmm.
That I think talent wise you're better than. Coaching wise, I think you're better than. You should have beat them last year. You go and find a way to beat Arkansas on the road. Go beat Kentucky. Go beat Vanderbilt. Arkansas, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. Teams that I think historically haven't been on Auburn's level. And if you look at the talent roster, they still aren't now.
Right.
Beat Mercer. And if you can find a way to beat Georgia or Alabama, who have had struggles against Auburn in Jordan-Hare Stadium, struggled against Hugh Freeze two seasons ago. Both of those teams. You could argue that Auburn should have won both of those games 2 years ago in Jordan-Hare Stadium with a significantly worse roster.
Yep.
If you are going to try and spin this positively, it's not a gloom and doom, oh, we have no chance. You get Bama and Georgia at home. You have a favorable schedule in the middle. If you can find a way to start hot, I mean, like you're saying, like I'm not saying national championship is the sky here, mm-hmm. the ceiling, but you can find your way into the college football playoff. This could be a great season. And like we were saying a minute ago, it feels like Auburn has the talent to where they should be in that conversation, at least at some point this season.
Yeah, it just, you made it harder on yourself if you're Hugh Freeze and this staff and this team. And of course, there are so many changes that were made in terms of who's on this roster now at key positions, at quarterback and on the offensive line, and a couple of defensive additions as well, some offensive linemen too. And you've made it harder than what it should have been, and there's no positive upward momentum to start the season. It's a scared and hopeful momentum going in, or a feeling, a hopeful feeling going into the season. But you start to win some of those games and you do start to build some of that momentum, and it's going to carry over into everything else that you do, like recruiting, which is where we started with this conversation. And all of a sudden, yeah, the EJ Crowells in the world may just want to come and play at Auburn, may want to take that chance, because you said it earlier, you can only sell a vision for so long. You can only sell this idea and the rebuild and the future of Auburn. You can only sell it for so long for a place that, in terms of NIL and revenue sharing and things like that, we all feel that Auburn's going to be right there with the top brands in the country in competition in terms of money and NIL and revenue sharing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to think about it as a fan, or even as somebody on Auburn staff, or as a recruit, just anybody, realizing that, the Auburn brand only has so much allure if it's not doing anything on the field. You have to win games if you want these top recruits. I'm sure the conversation around the water cooler goes some right now with Hugh Freeze and Auburn goes somewhat like it, at least in some circumstances. It kind of feels like we're having our Tennessee moment, right? It kind of feels like we're wading into the woods and we ain't coming out for a long time. We are not finding our coach. And I really do hope that's not the case. I hope Freeze is able to find a way to turn things around this year, to get Auburn back to where it was just 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. It feels like this is objectively the worst period of Auburn football that in my lifetime.
My lifetime, yep.
Just find a way to get back to what you were, and the brand will start to kind of carry some weight. You'll get some of these recruits again.
And I think there is a small portion of the fan base that doesn't want Hugh Freeze here. There was a large portion of them that didn't like the hire initially, but I feel, and please correct me if I'm wrong, if you're somebody out there, call us 334-321-1390 or in the text box at 334-784-1067. I feel that the majority of the fan base is kind of in this spot of, we want this one to work. Whether you are a Hugh Freeze fan or not, I think most of the Auburn fan base is like, man, we're tired of going through coaches. We're tired of paying people to not work here. Like, we want this to work, and you want it to be Hugh Freeze. You want him to be the man, and I think you can understand, or at least tell by the way Hugh Freeze acts and speaks and carries himself, that this is a place he wants to be. He's talked about his family likes it here. They enjoy Auburn. They like everything that it has to offer. But you have to deliver. It's a results oriented business. It always has been, and it always will be. And whether you like Hugh Freeze or not, a fan of him on or off the field, it doesn't matter. I feel most of the Auburn fan base wants this one to work.
And if you're going to have it work, you got to get some of those recruits. And if you're going to get some of those recruits, starts August 29th at 7 p.m.
That's right, against Baylor on the road in Waco. We'll continue talking this and also revisit a conversation we had yesterday, too. The leash in the quarterback room, with Jackson Arnold coming in as a transfer quarterback, Deuce Knight as the star-studded freshman, or maybe Ashton Daniels, the West Coast kid. We'll talk about that when we come back, as we're off and running here on the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Friday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. We got Lance Daw in the studio with us on this Friday afternoon. He's the host of Locked On Kentucky. How are things in Lexington? I mean, basketball is pretty cool, and Mark Pope is pretty awesome, I would say. I think he did a pretty good job in year one, and we'll talk some more basketball in depth later on in the show. But on that side of things, everything seems to be going just fine for the Cats, huh?
I'm going to talk about this actually later today on Locked On Kentucky, but you guys realize that Duke had their entire starting five drafted, and they lost to a Kentucky team that was put together in a month.
Yeah.
Do we want to, like, talk about that? Yeah. Do we want to just acknowledge
there's
that?
There's that. I mean, there's the – we have NBA draft conversations coming up at 2:30, but the fact that Rutgers had two top five picks and still didn't finish over 500.
Oh, we're going to talk about Ace Bailey. Yes. Oh, I'm ready for that.
Yes, we're going to talk all of that coming up in just a little bit. But, yeah, if you are looking for some Kentucky inside and stuff, check out Lance wherever you get your podcast with Locked On Kentucky. But we continue talking a little Auburn football, and one of the couple of conversations we're going to revisit from yesterday's show here today, because I'm curious on where you stand on this. I brought up the idea of a leash on Jackson Arnold, because several times throughout the last couple of years, we've had these debates and these conversations going into the season for Auburn. It's like, okay, when do you make a decision on Bo Nix if he's really the man? Or when do you make a decision on Robbie Ashford or TJ Finley? And then the most recent one was Peyton Thorne, right? We talked about Peyton Thorne last year, halfway through the year. It's like, or even going into the season, like, at what point do you move on from this experiment that ultimately didn't lead to what you wanted it to? And so as Jackson Arnold steps into this offense, Lance, year one transfer, numbers were fine last year, but we understand that his roster was depleted because of all of his receivers being injured. He's got the ability to use his legs, but it is a year one situation with Deuce Knight sitting right behind him. Is there a leash on Jackson Arnold this season? And if so, what is it?
Is there a leash on Jackson Arnold? I think you would have to assume if there is a leash, it's a little bit longer than Auburn fans would like because of what you have behind him. If you had another transfer quarterback that you felt semi-confident in, if Ashton Daniels like shows out in fall camp, maybe we have a conversation about the leash hypothetically being shorter. In my mind, the depth behind Jackson Arnold makes me question whether or not Hugh Freeze would want to pull Arnold quick. Because, like, do you want to throw a freshman quarterback out there? Do you want to take that risk and mess him up, possibly? Right. Is Ashton Daniels the answer to solving your offensive woes if Arnold isn't playing well? And I'm going to be honest with you, Jacob. You look at the kid's numbers from last season. Knowing what was happening at Oklahoma, the numbers are not, they're not blow you away good. They're not bad.
Right.
12 touchdowns, three picks, and you're completing 63% of your passes. You are a true dual threat.
Yep.
Proven in the Alabama game, of
Very
course.
Very much so.
I mean, the kid can play.
Yeah.
It's not like you're taking a flyer on a three-star quarterback from Michigan State and just hoping things work out. It's like, this kid was kind of holding things up at various points despite what was happening around him. And by the way, that's no shade to Peyton Thorne. It's just it's a different player, type of player coming in.
Yeah, it is.
So if there is a leash, I would say it's probably a decent. You can if you disagree, I'd love to hear your opinion. But like, I would say it's probably a decently long one. Maybe I'm undervaluing Deuce and Ashton, but in my mind, like, this is Auburn's guy.
The argument that I made was, I don't want to go into the season with Jackson Arnold the way we went into the season last year with Peyton Thorne, which was having a leash, having the negativity, always being looking over his shoulder, him having any sort of doubt or idea that he could be pulled, right? I mean, you don't go get Jackson Arnold, a former five-star recruit at quarterback who had, like you said, good numbers at Oklahoma despite all the injuries and against all the odds. You don't go get him unless you want him to be the man. You bring in Ashton Daniels to be a depth piece in an emergency situation, and Deuce Knight is the future of this program, so we think, and now you go and get Falzone, the Pennsylvania kid, the Penn State Penn State flip, rather, in the class of 2026. But you don't go get Jackson Arnold if he's not the man. And what I don't want is what we saw with Peyton Thorne, which was negativity, which was doubt, which was confusion, which was miscommunication. All of that all came together and led to an underwhelming performance and really an underwhelming career for Peyton Thorne here at Auburn. I don't want that to repeat with Jackson Arnold. I think Arnold's a better quarterback. I think he'll have a better offense this year. I'm hoping the play calling and decision making is a little bit better too. I just don't know if there's a set moment of, okay, if he doesn't have, you know, X amount of wins by the time you play Arkansas, then he's going to be yanked and you're going to try Deuce Knight. I think it is a emergency situation for Jackson Arnold to not be the starter at some point.
Well, we're talking about the word should. Let's lay things a few things out here and you can push back. Auburn should have one of the better offensive lines in the SEC.
They should.
Auburn should have arguably the best receiving core in the SEC, if not one of the five best receiving cores in the nation.
I think they do. I don't think should. I think they do.
They have a head coach who has been known in the past as a pretty dang good play caller.
Yeah.
You should be able to, with a five-star quarterback, put together a pretty good offense this year, man. I think what you're saying there, I agree, as far as like mentality with both from the fan base, the coaching staff, everyone surrounding Jackson Arnold, you need to have a positive, confident mentality heading into the season and throughout it, even when things get shaky, because nothing is perfect. It's college football. But yeah, I agree with you. Not going into last year or going into last year with so much negativity around Thorne. I mean, it had to have affected his play, and I certainly think it did kind of affect the vibes around Auburn just generally with Arnold, man. Things should work out, but man, you got to be confident heading into it regardless.
And there may be some shakiness to start. Three of your first five games are on the road. I mean, it could get ugly early. It could look rough. It could take some time, but everything should come together for Auburn offensively on the football field this season. We're halfway through our number one, but when we come back, we're talking the NBA draft because Jahni Broome got drafted. Dylan Carnwell's on a team and a lot of other Tigers as well. We'll talk about those. We'll talk about other names from the SEC who are now playing in the association. That's coming up next here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. We got Lance Dove, Locked On Kentucky, in the studio with us all afternoon long. Christian Griffin out for the weekend. He will be back on Monday. And so we continue on with a ton of topics on this free-for-all Friday, and the NBA draft has come and gone. You were able to hopefully tune in and catch that here on ESPN 106.7 over the last couple of days. Round one was on Wednesday. Round two was last night, and Lance, there are a lot of names on this board from the 2 days of the NBA draft that have, of course, a lot of ties with the SEC, with who you cover with Kentucky, with Auburn, of course, which we're going to get to. Any surprises to you in the first round, just in general? It can be Auburn-Kentucky related. It could be SEC. It could just be across the board. Any surprises in round one from the NBA draft of who went where or where they were in the process?
Colin Murray Boyles as a top 10 selection, I know he's good, is a little surprising to me. Just because of the question of whether or not at 6'7", can he shoot the basketball? He was a 5 in college. He's not going to be a 5 in the pros.
No.
You have to have that versatility. For the Raptors to take him at 9 is a little interesting. Although I will say the fit here I think is pretty decent for the Raptors. And he's a smart kid, great kid.
Mm-hmm.
Got nothing to say but praise about who he is as an individual. But for him to go top 10, I think was very interesting. I think the Hornets selecting Knipl at 4 was a little uninspired. I would have liked to have seen them taken. I would have taken Trey Johnson.
Love Trey Johnson.
If it were me,
that kid is so talented.
And the more confusing thing was the double down on what I said to Locked On NBA host Doug Branson, who also is the host of Locked On Hornets, whenever they selected Liam McNeely at 29, in the moment, I said immediately, like, isn't that just like a worse version of Knipl? And then we both looked up like his like positives and negatives. Yeah. It was like identical to Knipl's like draft breakdown. So the Hornets, I think, were a little confusing there at 4-29. I am kind of surprised with the whole Ace Bailey thing, the way that that shook out.
Dude, that is such a weird situation, man. I mean, is this not like a red flag? Is this not a bad sign for what is to come? I mean, the last update that I had seen, and you probably have a little bit more insight on this and can explain to our listeners kind of what's going on with the Ace Bailey situation. Pretty much he was not happy with where he got drafted. Yeah. And this was the guy who was saying, if I don't get drafted by a certain team or certain teams, I'm just not going to show up. I'm just not going to play for you. So you better not draft me because I ain't playing.
Yeah, so Ace Bailey, five-star recruit, plays at Rutgers of all places, coming out of the Scarlet Knights, heading into the draft, like, doesn't work out with anybody. Like, it just says no to literally every single lottery team that he could possibly work out with. And this was, I can't remember if the reports came out after the draft or, like, during and then after of what you were just saying, of him and his agent telling these teams, if you draft me, I will not report. I will not come play for your team. It's not going to happen. It did come out after the draft that he told at least one team in the top five, if you draft me, I will not play for you. Yeah, I will not do it.
That's so wild.
Which, by the way, just want to throw this out there. If you didn't want to, I got to pull this back up. If you didn't want to go play for the Spurs, the 76ers, the Hornets, the Jazz, let's just throw the Pelicans and the Wizards in there for fun. If you didn't want to go to one of those places, why on earth did you go play at Rutgers for college? Why didn't you go play at a blue blood school if apparently all you care about is playing with a good team?
I mean, that's where all the big name five stars go is Rutgers, right? I mean, right. That's just what they're known for
him and Dylan Harper.
So, and again, I will never, ever, ever, ever let this die. The fact that Rutgers had two top five draft picks, Lance Dahl, they not only missed the NCAA tournament, they were 15-17 overall. They were under 500 with two top five draft picks on their team.
I will say this. I said it during the break. I'll say it again. John Calipari, eat your heart out, man. I cannot believe he wishes he could be this bad with that top tier talent. Goodness gracious.
But yeah, so Ace Bailey, what's the latest update on him? He got drafted, and I'm sure there are updates. I haven't had a chance to really check in on the Ace Bailey saga, but that was definitely one of the biggest storylines.
He did not fly out to Utah with Walter Clayton Jr. That was the update this morning, I believe, is that he was not on the plane with Clayton to Utah and has had quote-unquote minimal contact with the organization.
My God. I mean, Christian and I talked about this the other day. I mean, what are we doing? We're in a world where you have dudes being drafted to the pros in professional sports that have basically said, no, I'm good. I hold the cards. I'll make the decision. Let me go and sleep on it and see if I really want to play for you. And look how far we've come. God, we sound like the Get Off Our Line guys. I mean, this is like, back in my day, you got drafted and you were thankful for it and you were appreciative of the opportunity and you played for any team and organization that gave you a chance. But what's wrong with that mentality, Lance? I mean, we have come full circle here to where you now have top five draft picks that say, yeah, I don't want to play in Utah, so I'm just not gonna show up.
It's not like we're drawing straws to see who's going in the shaky coal mine later today.
It's not
like this is District 12 and we're sending you off to the Hunger Games, bro. You're about to be paid millions of dollars to play a game for a living.
To play basketball.
And by the way, what I don't understand, considering he was such a shot chucking wing at Rutgers, I don't understand is, like, wouldn't you want to go to one of these bad teams to, like, be their offense? Wouldn't you want to go average 20 on poor shooting at a place like Utah or Washington where they don't have a ton of options?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to go be their flashy draft pick, make millions of dollars, hustle their organization and get a great deal and go shot chuck? What are you looking for? What are you looking for to satisfy you? Because clearly you don't want to play the game. You want something. I don't understand what it is, but you don't want to play basketball. You don't want to go out there and hoop. And he's running from the grind. I'm so mad about this. He is running from the grind. He's running from. I don't understand.
I hate it. I sound like a purist on this, but it's just. Take what they give you, man. Like you said, millions of dollars to go play professional basketball. And the Utah Jazz is not a bad organization. They're not great, but they're not bad. I just don't understand why. And I get. Let me look at this from the other perspective for just a second here. I understand the idea of saying I'm a top five draft pick. I should be able to decide where I want to play my professional career, what coach I want to be with, what teammates I want to have, what city I want to live in. I get all of that. And I get that that is a thorn in the side. It's a untraditional take. So I understand where he's coming from, but it's never worked that way. That's not how the draft works. That it's never been this way, ever.
And you know the players in the NBA that do have that power, that can say, I want this coach, I want this guy traded. Do you know what they do before they are able to obtain that level of power or control or respect? They go out there and prove it.
Yeah, they win.
They go out there, LeBron James, and they go to the playoffs as a rookie. Didn't they make the finals in his rookie season, and they played against, who was it, Detroit?
Or was it that, or year two year that he two. Made it? Yeah, when they played the Spurs,
but
right?
But you go out there early and you prove it. You know, Kobe Bryant was able to make those demands during the draft process because he's Kobe freaking Bryant.
Right.
This is an Ace Bailey out of Rutgers, 15-7 Rutgers University. You are not Kobe, LeBron, Steph. You're not one of these players that has that type of motion, bro. You got to lock in, go to one of these teams, and prove that you are capable of being a star. I do find it funny. This is a completely random side note. His top three statistical comps on KenPom, top one's Kevin Knox, just to show you what we're dealing with, by the way.
Jeez.
So if you want to talk about pro outlook, he's my guy because he's from Kentucky, but the Fortnite kid is not that comp's not very promising. Brandon Ingram and then Jason Tatum. Those are like his three comps, statistically.
I mean, not bad.
You got to go prove that you're a Jason Tatum.
Yes.
Or a B.I. before you say, I'm not going to play for Utah. I'm not going to play for the Spurs or the 76ers. Philadelphia would be a great spot.
Yeah.
It would have been a great spot to have a shooting wing to go alongside Embiid, Grimes, who seems to be coming along, Paul George. I mean, that would be a great, great situation for him to learn with George, to have like scoring options outside of him. I don't know, man. I don't get it.
That was one of the biggest storylines of the first round, and I'm glad that you brought up the 76ers because we get to talk about them right now because they took a guy that we know very much about here on the Plains, where Auburn saw their first draft pick of 2025, and it was Jahni Broome, the center from the Tigers. He gets taken in the fifth spot in the second round, which is 35th overall, which is early. It's higher than what most projections had him. We talked about it on the show, or I talked about it on the show yesterday, Lance, about how Jahni Broome was being projected in the 40s, right? I mean, anywhere from 41, 42, 45, 46, somewhere in there. And the 76ers take Jahni Broome at the 35th overall spot to Philadelphia. And look, I think that's a great spot for him. I think he can go there and play the style of basketball that he wants to play. And in your mind, Lance, I'll throw this to you. What is it about Jahni Broome right now that you believe can make him an NBA player? And then is there something that you feel he needs to get better at to make sure that he can be a long-term NBA guy?
I think the things that he could improve upon to make him like a long-term NBA player, I don't think are things that he can necessarily make significant improvements with. And I'm talking about his athleticism. Like, you've seen the tweet of Desmond Watson had like a higher vert than him.
Yes.
Like the athleticism is something that I don't necessarily know he can do a whole lot about at this stage of his career. What will make him a successful NBA player is the high floor across the board. A little bit of a side tangent here real quick. Kentucky picked up five-star center Malachi Marino in the offseason. And throughout the course of the summer, I've continued to compare him to Broome because of just how high of a floor he has at every phase of the game. Scoring, rebounding, distributing, defending, at all levels, he is good at everything. Statistically, it's actually kind of fascinating to watch his development at Auburn as he continued to get better at everything in his three seasons. He developed that outside shot. He developed a higher assist rate. He got better as an assist man, not just at distributing the ball, but not coughing it up. He was really solid around the rim for three straight seasons, and it felt like he got better and better. Despite shooting 28% from three last year, it still felt like he was a legitimate threat from beyond the arc. His form had definitely improved. Like, he became a better player across the board. And I think that just being merely good at all of these different things is going to allow him, at a place like Philadelphia, with Embiid getting hurt so frequently, to possibly go out there and show what he's capable of as a legitimate stretch five who brings you that NBA versatility. That's the name of the game, right? Is you want positionless basketball. You want versatility. Those are the, you want efficiency. Jahni Broome can provide all three of those things. It's not going to be at an insane, I think, starting caliber, at least not off the rip. But as of right now, with the place that he went and what his tools are currently, I think this is a great spot.
We'll keep talking about the NBA draft as Jahni Broome sees his name and hears his name called to the Philadelphia 76ers last night. And while there were a handful of Auburn guys who didn't get drafted, several of them are going to have opportunities to be on professional teams. We'll talk about those guys, where they could end up, and how they could make a lasting impact on the league. We'll have that for you when we wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, we continue talking the NBA draft, which concluded last night as Jahni Broome heard his name called. He'll be going to Philadelphia. I saw a video today, Lance, that he's there. He is already there. Him and Edgecombe are already in Philadelphia. They were, just shooting around, kind of getting some photos and some videos and things. And so really excited for Jahni Broome to be drafted and heading it to Philadelphia. And while nobody else from Auburn was officially drafted, several guys did find their way into some teams, whether it was a two-way contract or being able to try to earn their spot into a couple of places. And the two to highlight, Miles Kelly and Dylan Cardwell, two guys that are going to have a shot, Lance.
Where did Kelly end up signing? I know Cardwell ended up going with the Kings.
I believe it was Charlotte, I believe.
Okay.
I believe. Let me double check. I had it pulled up and I lost it. I believe that he did sign with Charlotte, but I will try to figure that out.
Positional size and strength for both those guys is not going to be an issue. I mean, if you're wanting to ask the question of whether or not do either of those kids have a shot at actually making a roster, I think you would feel pretty confident in both of them being able to show off.
It was Dallas.
Even better. As a former Mavs fan, I will take
former Mavs fan.
Yeah, after Luka got traded, when was that? Was that January, February?
Yeah.
I decided that I would be, after several years of Mavs fandom, giving that up. Because I couldn't take it anymore, and I became a Knicks fan immediately, because I've always liked the Knicks.
Not the Knicks.
I'm sorry. I don't know. Listen, I know their fan base gets a really bad rap, but I like the vibes.
I'm a Celtics fan, so that's why I say that.
Okay.
I'm a huge, I'm a Celtics, Red Sox, Bruins fan.
Well, I'll see you in the parking lot, and listen, if Tracy has to come on here and start the intro for hour number two, you'll know what happens.
Because we're fist fighting outside.
that's a great spot for him with the Mavs, and as far as the Kings go, I don't know necessarily what their roster situation is, but you talk about being one of the best defenders in college basketball at 6'11", kids able to move. It's just Cardwell's just a stud. I would love to see him make a roster and actually be able to find somewhere in the NBA where he can play consistently, whether that's in the G League or like on an actual NBA roster. It's a great, great human being.
He's awesome.
And I think somebody that could really flourish in like a specialty role.
That's the thing. And Christian and I were talking about it the other day. I mean, I just worry. And we were actually talking about this a little bit during the break just now. I'm concerned in terms of Dylan, not about his ability or his athleticism or his IQ or anything. Like we know all of those things are there. He took such a big jump into this last season. Not that he wasn't good before, but you could just tell it was different this past year when Auburn made a run to the Final Four. I am concerned about the NBA and the direction that the game has gone in the last 10 years, where it is just purely offense. It is just offense heavy, where we're going to run up and down the floor. We're going to get as many possessions as we can. We're not really worried about the quality of shot, because quantity will save us in the end. I'm concerned that the NBA is so offensively driven that a guy like Dylan Cardwell could earn his way on, yes, because of the effort, the energy, the defense, the rebounding and things, but could slowly slip off and kind of out of sight, out of mind, because we know his offensive game in terms of scoring the basketball is not his strength.
May I perchance play my Walker Kessler card? To convince you that it's possible for a defensive
oriented
center.
He pulls out of
center.
His sock and puts it on the table.
I draw three cards from my deck, and they're all just Walker Kessler. No, I think you're right. I think you are absolutely right. Rare case like Kessler, former Auburn center.
Sure.
I mean, you could make the case to say, look, maybe Cardwell's not a day one starter in the NBA, and maybe he's not on the level defensively as like similar to Kessler. But, I mean, that's his calling card. The kid gives effort. I mean, if you want heart, effort, to be able to run up and down the floor with the chaos and to be able to stick with guys defensively, I would like to see Cardwell get a shot. There is, I think, a spot. Now, there may not be a ton of spots for guys like Cardwell, but I think there is a chance for him to make the league despite maybe some of his offensive limitations. So I have hope. Yeah.
Walker Kessler averaged a double-double this season in the NBA. Yeah. Averaged 11 points, 12 boards, and averaged about 66% from the floor. So I think Walker had a more polished offensive game in terms of finishing around the rim, and Walker could actually shoot it a little bit from the outside. I don't know what his three-point numbers were. But
well, something that we were talking about during the break, about like some of these kids just being able to adjust to the speed and the flow of the professional game after showing like our herky-jerky style in college.
Yeah.
I was talking about Justin Edwards from Kentucky specifically during the break. Who knows? Maybe somebody like Cardwell, where all of a sudden he shows a little bit of face-up game when being pushed to do so. Something that he wasn't asked to do at Auburn because of the system. Who knows? I've got hope.
You have hope. Walker Kessler shot it at a very solid 17.5% from the three-point line. So don't think we're counting that in terms of his success in the NBA. But several guys from Auburn, whether they were drafted, signed contracts, are going to work out and try to get a contract. Several more players will rep Auburn in the National Basketball Association. So looking forward to see what their path looks like in the future. That is it for hour number one. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two. Over and underhyped quarterbacks in the SEC. I know Lance is really excited to talk about the Kentucky quarterback, plus SEC basketball outlook as well. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast version of the show. We take the audio, put it on our station website for you so you can go and check that out each and every day at ESPNAU.com. I know a lot of you listen to us live there every day as well, so be sure to go and check out the podcast center there at ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, we talked a lot of Auburn football recruiting and just how this upcoming season could turn it all around, could change it, could possibly fix it if you just win games. It's that easy, folks. Just win games and everything will be okay. We also talked about the NBA draft, which concluded last night, and heard Jahni Broome get drafted from Auburn to the Philadelphia 76ers and some other guys around the SEC as well. So all of that was in the first hour. If you missed it, again, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. And coming up here in hour number two, we're going to start talking some quarterbacks around the SEC, just the hype that we have seen and heard so far in the spring, now into the summer, something I touched on yesterday with Christian. Excited to have some more insight on that here in the second hour. Plus, we're going to dive into some basketball, SEC basketball outlook. I know it's late June. We've got some early bracketologies out there, and some rosters are all starting to come together. So really excited to dive into that later on in the show as well. We've got Lance Dahl in the studio today of Locked On Kentucky. No Christian Griffin. He'll be back on Monday. So we got a lot of that coming up in hour number two. But before we get to content, we want to remind you that the second hour of our show, each and every day here on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Who is the most overhyped quarterback going into the season in the SEC? Maybe an underhyped quarterback in the SEC? And where does Jackson Arnold, the presumed starter for Auburn, fall into this conversation? And Lance, it's only appropriate because your man, Zach Calzada, is so underhyped, it's unbelievable. And it's just baffling to me that they're not even talking about this man.
Gentlemen, if you are the worst quarterback in the SEC, according to Yahoo Sports, Athlon, ESPN, and any sort of ranking system out there, there's only one place to go, and that is through the roof, baby. He is the most underrated quarterback in the SEC, by definition.
For a reason.
Yeah. For a very, very legitimate reason. Is Zach Calzada ranked as the 16th, the worst quarterback in the conference.
Yeah, it's just, that seems to be pretty consistent no matter where you look for that young man.
Although I pulled this up earlier before I came over to the studio, and I pulled it back up just now. Yahoo Sports put out this article, I think 3 days ago, ranking SEC quarterbacks. You want to guess who's 15th? Right above Zach Calzada.
Oh, goodness. There, I think there's a lot of options.
There's a few options. Well,
Christian and I did our quarterback ranking several weeks ago.
Tell me where you had Gunnar Stockton.
I think I had him at like 12.
Okay, well, they've got him at 15th. He
that
is only
seems
a peg
a little,
above.
That seems a little harsh.
Our goat.
I think I had him at 12. I lost my list. I had my list in here, and somebody threw it away, and I don't know where it went, and I wasn't smart enough to, you know, write it down digitally or take a picture of it. But I think I had him under 10. I think I had him in the bottom third of quarterbacks, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him at 15. I would argue that you could probably put somebody like Simmons or Shapen probably a little bit lower. I also wouldn't have, how do you pronounce, is it Bo Prebula?
Prebula.
I got the cadence. Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't, they've got him 11. I would probably have him lower on this list. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this, because we've had this conversation a couple of times, Christian and I have, about Stoops at Kentucky. And I know, Locked On Kentucky, you guys are 98% basketball on the show, because that's what Kentucky fans care about. It's the Duke and Indianas of the world that are that way. But is this it? I mean, is this the year for Stoops in Lexington? I mean, it's been a fun ride. It's been fun. It's been game-changing for Kentucky football. He'll go down as the greatest coach to ever coach there up to this point, I think, longevity-wise, long-term. I mean, he has done more for that program than any other coach in its history. But it just seems to have stalled, man. It just seems like nothing is getting better, especially when you're entering into this new era. I'm not sure where Kentucky stands in terms of NIL and revenue sharing and all that with football, basketball. They're one of those weird ones in the SEC that could put more to basketball than others. So is this it for Stoops at Kentucky? You got to win 7 or 8 this year, or they may finally move on from him?
I'll tell you where I stand, and then I'll tell you what feels like the general online consensus about Mark Stoops. I would have let him go last year. If it were me, I would have said, okay, this is it. After you tried to bail for Texas A&M and you had a crap year like this, you're gone.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have been able to take another season. But he's here, And he had come into the offseason with like, okay, let's wait and see what he does in the portal. And then he got Zach Calzada. And then on top of that, he had his lead recruiter, Vince Marrow, leave for Louisville.
Ooh, I did not know that.
That happened a few weeks ago.
That's not cool.
Where he said earlier this offseason, I'm staying, I'm not going anywhere. And then Kentucky football recruiting hit a massive lull where nothing happened for months, and then he left for Louisville. And Kentucky, I think, after when that happened, Kentucky had three recruits. They're up to 11 now, which just shows you the work they've been putting in. But Jacob, when I say they have not landed outside of, I think, a top 10, the only player that they've landed that's worth a rip is a top 10 quarterback in next year's class. Every other player is a low-rated three-star. I think they've gotten at least one no-star that they've added to their commit list, which, woo. It has been awful on the recruiting trail. You lost your head guy to frickin' Louisville.
Yeah. And who's quietly just decided they want to compete in athletics again after being down for 10 years.
And you've just... And then you've got Zach Calzada. It's like...
That's just... Zach Calzada's not the answer, right? I mean, we've seen this experiment before, and I know it's Kentucky football, but it's like, man, that's the best you can do. That's the best option you could find was Zach Calzada at Kentucky. And so, yeah, I think he is clearly underrated's not even the right word. He's just underhyped, and that is for a reason.
So, in my opinion, because of how bad the recruiting has been, because of how bad the offensive line has been over the past several years, unfortunately, because their offensive line coach that had made it just what incredible for several years had passed away. Ever since then, I mean, it's just been kind of a deterioration on the offensive side of the football. My opinion is that he should have been gone already. I would like to see him gone after this year, but there's this weird dichotomy between people like me who think that it should be over and people who are so offended at the concept of letting Stoops go, it seems like online, where it's like there seems to be a lot of people that are offended and bristle up whenever you're like, man, I'd love to see John Summerall be the head coach next season. Because there's like, you talk about Auburn's situation, they've got hope. We've got no hope. There's no hope that Kentucky can make it through their schedule this year.
Right.
Win any sort of game worth of significance with Zach Calzada as quarterback. There is no chance that he is going to put up a 8-5, 9-3, something, even a 7-5 type year. They're gonna suck. And so it's like, for me, I'm like, let's go ahead and
you gotta
shop
rip the
around.
Band-aid off.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
when I'm with you.
Whenever it gets bad in November, let's go ahead and start making some phone calls. But there's a lot of people out there that seem to think that that is just heinous.
Yeah.
That is just blasphemy say that Mark Stoops should be fired.
And I get it.
I understand why.
Right. I would compare it to, not to this extreme, so please don't take this the wrong way. I compare it to if and or when Auburn basketball would have a conversation about Bruce Pearl. If the Final Four had not just happened and you had made the one Final Four, but then nothing had happened after that, and several years go by and Auburn starts to have it, which I think we were somewhat teetering on that after some you know, bad performances in the NCAA tournament, right? If Auburn doesn't make a run this past year, it would be the same type of conversation as how do you get rid of somebody, or at least how do you even have the conversation about getting rid of somebody who's done so much for the program? Bruce Pearl with Auburn basketball, talking Mark Stoops with the Kentucky football program, different levels, but the same general idea of it's a hard pill to swallow, but I'm with you. I think it should have already been done. You look at what Stoops has done. I'll propose this question. I'll answer it right after I do. For those of you listening right now, Mark Stoops has been the head coach of Kentucky. His first year was in 2013.
Yeah.
If you had to guess right now, listening to this radio show, what do you think Mark Stoops' record at Kentucky is all time?
It's sub 500. I know that, right?
He's 77-73, just above 500. He's above five. He has a winning record at Kentucky that includes his first year at 2-10, couple of years at 5-7, had a 5-6 year in the COVID year, but you know, you could put an asterisk by that if you would like. He's also has 2 10-win seasons at Kentucky. They won 10 games in 2018 after winning the Citrus Bowl, and they won 10 games in 2021 after winning the Citrus Bowl. And so you look at it, and it's like, man, the highs are high. He's got an 8-win season in there, a couple of 7-win seasons in there. But since 2021, when you went 10 wins, 7-6 in 2022, 7-6 in 2023, 4-8 a year ago, and as you said, Zach Calzada is not going to save this team or this program for a team that is vastly under-talented compared to some of the others around the SEC.
So, first of all, I thought he was like a few games under 500. I'm shocked that he's above 500 because of just how bad those first few seasons were. I mean, you talk about like the leash being long for anybody. I mean, the athletic director, I think it was Mitch Barnhart at the time, still was like, we're going to let him ride it out. And
because at that time you had no other option.
You had no other choice. Yeah. And it ended up working out. The difference between Auburn, and I understand what you're saying, by the way. I'm not like I understand what you're saying, like the similarities between like what could have been, but like the difference between Auburn basketball and the current state of Kentucky football is that despite having great coaches that have elevated their programs past their norm, one of them is still producing.
Correct.
The other one is showing almost no signs of life over the last two seasons.
Yeah.
It has been bad on the offensive side of the ball, like very, very bad, despite having what was at the time a second round quarterback in Will Levis and what many people thought would have ended up being a first round quarterback. The difference between Pearl and Stoops is that one of them is still winning games and bringing in recruits and keeping this thing humming. Even if Pearl had lost in the round of 32 to Creighton, I think that any Auburn fan in their right mind who has been watching Auburn basketball for an extended period of time could not look at the state of the program and go, maybe it might be time to look elsewhere.
Right. Like, he's not the answer anymore.
Whereas for Stoops, it's like he's not producing, and I understand he's the greatest coach in school history, but there comes a point where if you're below what the standard was before he got there, mm-hmm. it's like if you're dipping to that again and it's consistent and you're not bringing in recruits, which is the big thing for me, you're not building for the future right now because you don't have anybody. That's my concern.
Yeah, I think it was past time for Kentucky to move on from Mark Stoops, and because I think in the era, and you could broaden this conversation not just on Kentucky, but on so many other programs around the country. Heck, even in the SEC, Vanderbilt and those who are considered near the bottom of their conferences. I look at the Big Ten, and you could have conversations about Rutgers and Maryland and Northwestern, and you look in the ACC, you could talk about the Pitts of the world and things like mm-hmm. that. And in the Big 12, I mean, you've got teams out there across the country that for so long it was just, well, we can't compete, we can't win recruiting battles with Alabama, so we're just gonna have to be mid and just be okay with that. But in today's era, with this new NIL revenue sharing, all this type of stuff, you have a chance if you're Kentucky to compete with an expanded playoff and with revenue sharing. Like, there are opportunities for a team like Kentucky football to actually compete on a yearly basis. And I don't think Mark Stoops is the answer anymore. And Lance, before we get to break it, and we'll talk some more quarterback stuff like we were going to, but this has been fascinating to me. I look at this schedule for Kentucky. Dude, I see 3 wins. I see 3 wins with non-conference games: Toledo, Eastern Michigan, and Tennessee Tech. I don't trust this Kentucky team until I see them on the field, being led by Zach Calzada. Yes, that Zach Calzada, Auburn fans, the one that you remember so vividly. I don't see them beating Ole Miss in week two of the season to start SEC play. That's brutal. At South Carolina with Lenora Sellers? No. On the road in Athens? I don't care who's playing quarterback.
Who scheduled that back-to-back? But
that's brutal.
And what makes even less sense is to have a bye week, those two road games, and then another bye week. Why wouldn't you wait like until – anyway.
Yeah, Go ahead. Yeah, so
– you got Texas after the Georgia game.
Yeah, so then you get – here's your reward. You get a bye week after getting your brains beat in by Georgia. You get to host Texas in Lexington. That'll be exciting. There will be more Longhorn fans there than there will Kentucky fans. Then you get to host Tennessee for a rivalry that's, you know, not. Then you get to come to Jordan-Hare, which that'll be the game Kentucky wins in the year because it's Auburn. Then you get to host Florida. That'll be fun. And then you end the season back-to-back road games. You get to visit Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt in Nashville. And then you get to go see your old pals in Louisville on the road on Saturday, November 29th. Brother, I see three wins on this schedule. I don't see Mark Stoops surviving the season.
Best case scenario looks like 5-7, and that would take you winning a game that you definitely shouldn't.
Call me crazy. Will they be underdogs in every single one of their conference games?
Yeah. There's not a single game on this schedule that they should be favored in. Unless Vanderbilt just plummets back down there.
Right, yeah, which could happen, but I mean, you're not going to be favored even at home against Ole Miss, Texas, Tennessee, or Florida.
Listen.
My goodness.
If you are listening to the show right now and you have a beverage in your hand, pour it out for Zach Calzada right now.
That man may not survive the season either.
He is not making it out the woods, man. This is going to be rough. Jeez.
Well, he is not a hyped quarterback by any means, but there are big names around the SEC that we can talk about and where Jackson Arnold will fit into this conversation as well. More on that when we come back, and then we're diving into SEC basketball. It's the end of June, but basketball season is closer than you think. We got all that coming up for you here on the Free For All Friday edition of On The Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
All right, we're back here on the Friday edition of On the Line. We're talking a little football, talking some quarterbacks and things before we take our bottom of the hour break. We're talking all things basketball after that for the SEC. We'll get some insights on Kentucky basketball. We'll talk some Auburn basketball, kind of some expectations for what the SEC could look like this upcoming season. But in terms of overhyped, underhyped quarterbacks going into the SEC season in 2025 for college football, obviously, you've got the Arch Mannings of the world. You have Garrett Nussmeier and things like that. And Christian and I talked yesterday when he called in on the road that we're not over-believers in Garrett Nussmeier. We don't believe that him at LSU returning just instantly makes them a national title favorite or anything like that. But that's how they're treating it, Lance, and I don't know how you feel about that. Plus, the idea that Alabama has a quarterback battle going on. There's not a ton of, seems not to be a ton of praise on Gunnar Stockton there at Georgia. And then a bunch of fresh names and faces across the league. I mean, it could be a shaky quarterback year for the Southeastern Conference this season.
I think that when you talk about whether or not a quarterback is properly rated or underrated, overrated, I think it is case by case. It is situational with what's going on around them. So you take a guy like Garrett Nussmeier, right? Statistically, really solid passer. Like coming back, one of the best quarterbacks statistically in the country. As a team, LSU might not be as good as some folks would like them to be, despite Nussmeier being a good QB. Lenora Sellers, I think statistically average last year, despite being incredibly flashy as a QB. He was a great dual threat, but he only threw for 2,500 yards. I think South Carolina as a team, it's a different comp. Like for Tennessee, for example, Joey Aguilar, you put him in another system, he's probably not going to be a top five quarterback in the SEC. But you see what that Tennessee system does for QBs. He might pop off stats-wise. He might look good.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think it makes him overrated or underrated because, like, this is the system that he's going to play in. I just think that some teams will elevate their QBs higher than maybe other programs will. And maybe it's not fair to say, oh, Garrett Nussmeier is not going to be this or that, because it really might end up being what's around him.
Let's get to the phone lines here as Daniel has a comment or a question here on this conversation. What's up, Daniel? You're on the line on this Friday afternoon.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are doing well today. I wanted to call in and ask who in your opinions and your gut feelings are, as far as quarterbacks go in the SEC, who is the most overrated, who is rated correctly, and then who is underrated in y'all's minds?
Okay, I like it. So overrated, underrated, and then who is ranked properly, right? That's what you're asking here?
Right.
Cool. Okay. Yep. We will. So kind of a rapid fire. We have a couple of minutes. Thanks to Daniel for calling in. 334-321-1390. You can get in on this conversation as well. You can also shoot us a text in the text box, 334-784-1067. And you look around. I mean, let's start with who is ranked properly, or who in terms of their hype or their expectations and things like that, Lance. I mean, there's a ton of lists out there that you can look, and we made some of ours as well earlier in the summer. But I take a guy like a Ty Simpson. If he does end up winning the job at Alabama, he's just kind of right there in the middle. I mean, he's kind of like an 8, 9, 10 ranked type of guy. And if he does end up being the man, until I kind of see what he is as a first-year starter, I think Ty Simpson is kind of right there in a perfect spot for what Alabama could be, and I think he's got room to grow, or he may not work out there at Tuscaloosa.
So we're starting with just properly rated. I think that Simpson's a great pick. My guy would be Marcel Reed. I think that he is a properly rated quarterback in the SEC. Statistically, not going to light you up. Mechanically, not the most polished guy, but I mean, he got it done against Auburn. You saw that despite struggling against Texas and LSU. I think he is an average quarterback in this league when you look top to bottom at what is coming back at signal caller and what's being brought in. I think Reed is probably the most average guy, but I think Simpson is also another, heading into the year, properly rated as well.
Okay, see, I'm... in terms of somebody who I think is being overlooked or underrated, Marcel Reed is my answer. I think the potential is there for him. I think you saw flashes of it a year ago. I think Texas A&M completely reloaded in the transfer portal, and we have to remind ourselves that this is not the Jimbo Fisher offense anymore. It's a different system now, and so I look at Marcel Reed as my overlooked, underrated, underranked quarterback going into the season, just because I think the potential is there for what he could do, and quietly could make Texas A&M a competitive team in the SEC in year two with Mike Elko, and also possibly make them a slight, you know, give them a slight chance to make it to the college football playoff. So that's actually Marcel Reed is my answer for somebody who's being underranked and kind of overlooked going into the season.
I think, and it's after looking over this list a few different times, it's very difficult for me to pick out a guy that I'm overrated on, so I'll follow you there talking about, you know, or underrated here. I said this on a recent episode of Locked On SEC Squad, actually. I think Jackson Arnold is the most underrated quarterback in this league.
Okay.
You have to look at two different things.
Did you say he's like a dark horse?
For the high? No. Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. I think it's two different things. And we already talked about it earlier in the show. First of all, it's surroundings.
Yeah.
Out on paper, he should be able to produce. On top of this, he's got the pedigree, five-star quarterback, and he held things together at Oklahoma at various points last year when things were going pretty bad. So yeah. I would say he's the most underrated quarterback in this league.
The guy that I think could be the most overrated or take a step back or is still getting too much love, is it crazy to say Diego Pavia? Is it crazy to say that?
That was my second pick behind Sellers.
Auburn fans can't say that, but maybe everybody else in the SEC can. So I'm predicting Diego Pavia to take a step back this year, and maybe that's just me hoping he doesn't do it again to Auburn in 2025. Daniel, we appreciate the call. It's been a lot of fun talking football, but we got to get to the hardwood, man. We got to talk about basketball in the SEC, a season outlook. Who is still playing in this conference? We'll talk about that. We got 30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. We got Lance Dahl in the house from Locked On Kentucky, filling in for Christian today, who will be back on Monday. And, man, let's talk some basketball. Why don't
we,
huh?
Let's do it.
Let's talk some college basketball. With the NBA draft now come and gone, you know who's going to be on these teams, you know where they're going and all that and stuff. But now we feel pretty good about rosters being finalized across college basketball, particularly in the SEC. And you and I were actually discussing a little bit earlier in a break about what Auburn's roster is going to look like, but also want to talk about that in comparison to some of the other rosters around the SEC, including the one that you cover on a daily basis, the Kentucky Wildcats, because I just have to admit, and I have several times on this radio show, what Mark Pope did in year one was incredible. What he did in such a short amount of time to put that roster together and then take them to the Sweet 16 for a guy when he was hired that most of the country said, who? Most of the country said that.
I said that.
Because it was like, yeah, I mean, it's like, wait, that's who they got to replace John Calipari? Okay, I guess we'll see how it goes. But I think year one was an absolute slam dunk home run, just a knockout, man. I think he is going to be a really, really good coach for a long time there in Lexington for the Wildcats.
Well, recruiting has not been an issue at UK, and Mark Pope proved in year one it's probably not going to be a problem while he's there. The thing that we were having questions about is how good of an in-game coach is he? Turns out he's a pretty bright offensive mind and a pretty good X's and O's guy. Defensively, you have some questions that I think were answered in the final third of the season. Like,
yeah.
Can he get his guys to actually play defense? The answer is, yeah. I mean, despite being down several kids, he's a good coach, plus the ability to recruit at where he's at. I think it's a great fit, great situation, obviously, with him being a former player. I mean, there's nothing but positive vibes and love in Lexington this year. And last night, when Kobe Bray and Amari Williams got drafted, I mean, it was incredible just to see the love from Twitter, just to see the hype around those two kids, not boastful about look at our draft picks or anything, just like happy for those guys. It's not necessarily a dramatic culture. It's not a culture shift because Calipari, absolutely players coach, you know, poured everything into his guys, still does. But man, just to see the love in Lexington right now, it's been incredible.
The SEC is going nowhere
No.
in terms of the talent and the coaching. I mean, I thought about this the other day, man. Look at what coaches are in this league right now, even with guys like Buzz Williams, who left to go to Maryland, which I'm still scratching my head over. Look at the coaches around this league right now, man. You've got Mark Pope, who is instantly becoming a superstar in Lexington. You have Nate Oates at Alabama. You have Bruce Pearl at Auburn. You now have Todd Golden, who is a national championship winning coach down at Florida. You have all of these guys. You've got Bucky McMillan is now in the SEC, ladies
Bucky
and gentlemen.
Bucky
Ball is here. I mean, you've got Rick Barnes who's still hanging around up in Knoxville. Like, this league has some of the best coaches collectively in all of college basketball, and I think the talent on the teams right now would reflect that. I mean, these are some of the best coaches in America are coaching college basketball in the Southeastern Conference. That's just really, really cool to me.
It's going to be a really good league, man. It's going to be a really good league. And I love that you point out, like, the SEC's not going anywhere. Because for a few weeks there, I was saying this, like, is the SEC going to be, like, I don't think they're going to take, like a huge step back, but, like, are they going to, like, drop off a little bit? And now that we're, like, post-NBA, like, draft, like, withdrawal with all of these kids coming back, Filon coming back to Bama, you've got
Tahad
for Auburn. I mean, you're looking at the at least the chalk of this league and going, goodness gracious, they're going to be really good. If you want to look at what some of the national pundits are saying about the SEC's best, I mean, you're seeing a lot of teams here in this top 10. Jacob, a lot of teams that are projected to be not just good, but really, really dominant.
Really good. And I mean, it's too early to
Fland
take
coming back
this.
To Florida, by the way. Forgot about that.
Yeah, and Florida also getting
Al Condon, they're running it all back. It's 2007 all over again.
Man, they're so good. They're so good. And Todd Golden, such a good coach.
Casual shout out to Xavier Lee, by the way, a 17-point per game scorer at Princeton that's just going to casually join this team. No big deal.
He's just going to walk in and just just slip in.
Just kind of ball out.
They're so good. And I jumped on the Todd Golden train early, and I claimed that, and I think I thought he was going to be very good. I wasn't ready for him to win a national title this quickly, but my idea was for him to be good at Florida and then be the next in waiting here at Auburn.
Well, before Mark Pope got hired, something that I could probably go back and find the clips on Locked On Kentucky, I kept saying it's too early to hire him because of his resume and like where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
But man, Golden's going to be a problem, and he'd be really good at Kentucky. That's all. And sure enough,
yep.
Proved with the Gators this past season, he's legit, and so are the Gators.
And they're paying him because of it. He got a contract extension. Yep. He is probably not leaving anytime. Because, no. I mean, what job historically or even right now, what job, what location, what school, what logo, what athletic department, what move would be a step up for him right now? You just won a national title. And I'm not saying right now, I guess in this year, but in the next couple of years, like what would be a step up for him in terms of coaching college basketball if he's down there winning national titles at Florida, a place that has three in the last 25 years?
My mind immediately goes to which programs in college basketball are resourcefully, like which teams are stronger with like financially and in terms of just program, overall, like what programs are stronger in college basketball? The only two that come to mind are Kentucky and Duke. And I'm not going to lie to you, Jacob, if you just won a title at Florida, which is pretty dang good in their own right, why would you leave for one of those two jobs when you know you can do it at Florida?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I think of, and I don't know if you have heard this idea, but it's one that I heard and I have taken and absolutely ran with it, is the idea of what the Big East could look like in the next several years because of revenue sharing.
Yeah.
And the idea that the Big East, most of those schools don't have football, and if they do, it's not the main revenue generator, right? So while they may not have up to the $20.5 million that every other school will have, like an Auburn, who then has to divvy that out between football, basketball, men's basketball, soccer, swimming, all of that, take a Xavier, for example.
Yeah.
Whatever money they bring in, they're going to put to basketball. DePaul, whatever money they get, they're going to put towards basketball. And so that is the thing that I think about is like, man, the Big East could be running this sport in the next 5 to 6 years. But even then, I don't know if that's a jump up for a guy like Todd Golden, who, again, just won a national title at Florida, one of the biggest and most known logos in all of college sports, and has a really good chance to do it again this year.
Every time I think about the Big East, I think about a conversation I actually had. I'm not going to name drop with somebody that actually used to work here way back when. This was like in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like so adamant that it was no longer a Power Six. They were saying the Big East is not what it was. It's only a Power Five in college basketball now. And I'm like, you don't watch the sport. And here we are now. Things are developing. And you are absolutely right. Big East might be a problem here.
The Big East has never gone away. The Big East is—it's no secret. It's my favorite conference of college basketball.
I
love
it.
Big East basketball. I grew up north, and so that's Big Ten basketball. Yes, is cool, but Big East basketball is just built different, man. I mean, you're talking about teams that play in Madison Square Garden. You're talking about UConn. I mean, who just went through one of the most dominant stretches in the history of American sports. Like Big East basketball is pretty buck, in my opinion. It's pretty awesome.
I love it.
But for Todd Golden, to get back to him and just kind of the SEC outlook, I mean, I genuinely don't see a situation that would make him want to leave Florida, especially with the money and things that they're paying him right now. But you talked about some of the projections and kind of some of these rankings, right? Joe Lunardi has his first bracketology out for 2026, which is kind of crazy. It's kind of wild.
He's cracked
it
up, bro. I don't know. I saw it. I talked about it.
He's got it projected in the end of June for what he thinks will happen in mid-March of next season. But he thinks the SEC is going to be good too, Lance. He has 14. 16 teams making the NCAA tournament from the SEC. A conference, remind you, that just broke the record for the most teams ever making it to the Big Dance at 13. He's predicting them right now to break that by getting 14 teams into the NCAA tournament.
It's probably easy to argue against because it's like, how on earth could you possibly get 14 teams at the same time? I think you make a strong case for it being in the realm of possibility because if you look at some of these teams that are like either at the midway point of their conference or like at the bottom of the conference, I guess, if we're stretching all the way to 14, LSU brought in one of the better transfer portal classes in the country. And nobody's talking about that.
I don't even think they're considered in this bracketology.
Which is bizarre. Like, Vanderbilt brought in a pretty good transfer portal class as well.
They're an 8 seed in this.
Yeah, so, like, Georgia should be pretty good, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of teams here that stunk it up in the SEC relative to some of the powerhouses, and were, like, NCAA tournament teams still. Oklahoma was still a tournament team last year. Texas was still a tournament team last year. There are a lot of teams in the bottom half of this league that are not what they used to be. It is a top-to-bottom, genuinely stacked league, man. It's not top-heavy. I know a lot of people want to say this for football as well. It's like, oh, they're carried by Alabama and Georgia. It's like, first of all, that's not true. Second of all, like, look at basketball as well, man. I mean, the SEC is just stacked.
And you had two teams in the Final Four last year. And the one who won a national title.
It's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere because you've got Florida bringing back all of their pieces. Frankly, you've got Kentucky that I think because of the addition of Jaden Quaynes, what is statistically one of the better defenders in the country last year. I think he's going to be the best this year. That was their problem, rim protection. You plug that hole, Kentucky's going to be pretty freaking hard to beat. You've got them in the top 10. You've got Arkansas with Calipari, who should be a top 15 team with all of their talent coming in. You've got a team like Auburn, Bama. They should be top 15, top 20 teams. Tennessee with Nate Amint and company. Jacoby Gillespie from Maryland.
Nate Amint went to Tennessee.
All my homies know his pain, bro. I wanted him so bad.
Yeah. I know another school that wanted him.
There are a lot of Texas should be like a borderline top 25 team this year.
You remember who's coaching at Texas now? Do you remember who got hired there?
Remind me. Oh, is it Sean Miller?
It is Sean Miller.
Man.
Sean Miller is so. There's another big name coach who's in the SEC, Mr. Sean Miller from Xavier.
This is such a good league, dude. There is no better time to be an SEC hoops fan. And I know there's some people out there that have the opinion like, if you pull for the conference, like, what are you doing? Pull for your team and just roll with it. Man, I am just a fan of the sport as a whole. I just kind of root for just good basketball in general.
Yeah.
My college basketball is my thing. I am so excited to see how some of these top programs perform, specifically Kentucky, obviously. But
what's the expectation there? I mean, after year one, again, you host the Locked On Kentucky podcast, a daily show covering Kentucky basketball. And year one, with a coach like Mark Pope and a roster he had a year ago, and then what he has brought in, what he retained, and what they're going to be adding via high school recruits. I mean, year one Sweet 16 is pretty awesome. I mean, that's about as good as you can ask for realistically in today's era of college basketball. But is it to this point for you or the fan base or the donors or whoever, I mean, is it time to improve on that already in year two? Or is it like, okay, well, let's see what happens here and then we'll go from there?
Well, Mark Pope made it very clear whenever he got here to day one. He's like, I'm not shying away from the expectation of every year we should compete for a national championship.
Okay.
And myself and some of the fan base last year looking at the roster was like, cool.
That's awesome.
If you make it close, you are incredible, which he got closer than a lot of us thought he would.
Ain't no doubt.
Which, an incredible, just perfect year one for Pope, I think. I could not have asked for more. I couldn't have asked for a Sweet 16 appearance. I've not seen that in the 5 years that I've been doing the show.
Yeah.
But
why you been doing that for 5 years now?
This will be my fifth season.
Good for you, man.
It's crazy to think about. But the expectation in Lexington right now is, okay, cool. You got a roster full of what some people called misfits, to go to the Sweet 16. By the way, you were down like at least three players, and most of those kids were not playing anywhere near 100%, the ones that had to. You were down so bad in terms of injuries, and yet you still find a way to beat Illinois, who had a first-round draft pick.
Which I called, by the way.
In Kasparis.
I had that on mine. I had Kentucky winning that game.
That's the most nervous I've ever been for a sporting event in my whole life. I was like heart beating out of my chest, like, I cannot believe we are competing.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable to get three-star freshman wings and guards to outperform teams like Tennessee and Duke and Gonzaga. Like, we pulled a kid from Delaware, and he whipped Duke and Gonzaga on the boards and at the rim. It's the reason we won both those games. Like, it is just bizarre what he was able to do. Okay, cool. You were able to do that. You brought in a five-star that was originally committed here, played at Arizona State, one of the best defenders in the country. You bring back what should be an All-American in Otega Owe. You get more physical. You bring in some five-star freshmen. It's not natty or bust, but a national championship is very much so in reach. And Pope has already said, yeah, I expect to go try and win a championship. And the fan base is saying, look, you better strap in, because yeah. this is a good team. A lot of people think that this is the best team Kentucky's had in a hot minute.
We joke about it a lot with several teams across the country in different sports, but I legitimately think that Kentucky is back. I think Kentucky was down. People took advantage. Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, those teams took advantage on all fronts. Recruiting, money, fan base, winning, things like that. Reputation. Kentucky's back, and I think Mark Pope was an incredible hire, one they took a risk on, and at least for now, it at least has shown that it's going to work out there in Lexington. And so, yes, 14 teams projected to make it to the NCAA tournament from Joe Lunardi. That will change a lot between now and then, of course, and once we start playing some games and things like that. But we need to take our final break here on the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We got a few more minutes before we get out of here. Reminder, Bill and Dan coming up for the drive from 4 to 6. They'll have you for the next couple of hours, so stay tuned. They got a whole lot coming up for you here on the network or on the station. And we've had Lance Dahl with us all show long today. My man, I cannot express my appreciation and gratitude for you stopping by and hanging out for a couple of hours. I know it's a little different. 2-hour radio, 25-minute podcast. I get it. I know it's a little bit more, but, man, I really appreciate you stopping by. We've had an absolute blast today, man.
I love hopping on the show, man, to talk hoops, to talk football. I think it's going to be this is, like, obviously summer, not a whole lot going on in the sports world. I cannot wait for this fall when we have a competent Auburn football program for you and Christian to talk about, and yes, for me to hop on every now
absolutely
and then and lock in for a couple hours. Like I was telling you earlier, doing this show every single day, I mean, it is respect to you for what you put into this, man. It is impressive, and it's fun. It is a blast. I absolutely love talking about, you know, getting to talk sports for a living.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on several times throughout the fall, definitely during basketball season, too. I mean, we'll probably make that a routine thing to have you on several times throughout the fall, winter, and into the spring as well. But for folks who are interested in Kentucky information, whether it's the firing of Mark Stoops that is inevitable, the crashing and burning of Zach Calzada at the quarterback spot, or the fact that Mark Pope and Kentucky basketball are going to win a national championship, where can people find you and keep up with everything you got going on?
You can follow me on Twitter at LockedOnUK. You can also check out the Locked On Kentucky podcast wherever you get your podcast, on YouTube. Even if you're not a Kentucky fan, would really appreciate it if you subscribed. I would really appreciate that. We talk about just generally a lot of college hoops. So if you're a college hoops fan, we try and dive into that quite a bit.
There you go. Check it out wherever you get your podcast. Of course, we have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC here every Thursday as well. Locked On's got a great thing going on with a lot of their college shows. And so, look, we've talked Auburn football recruiting today. We've talked NBA draft today. We've talked basketball today. We've talked all sorts of things on this show on a very, very free-for-all Friday edition of the show. And so if you missed any of it, check it out, the podcast version of the show, ESPNAU.com. We take the audio, put it for you on our station website. So go and check that out after the show today. We are back on Monday, so normal shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We are then off Thursday and Friday, July 3rd and July 4th. But we're back on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, normal shows, and then nothing on Thursday and Friday of next week. He has been Lance Daw of Locked On Kentucky. We appreciate him and his time today. Appreciate you being with us. And again, we're back on Monday. So is Christian. Christian says he's back on Monday, so we'll see if he does return from that trip, or maybe he just lives the vacation life and never comes back. I don't know. I guess we'll have to tune in and find out on Monday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he is Lance Daw. I'm Jacob Goins. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.